distinct honor. For many years, I've been seeing Rabbi Mizrahi's lectures online. And you guys want to join us?
I'm just checking.
We're nice people. You can come along with us.
Okay, thank you.
So for many years, hey, Isabel's here, guys. I wanted to wait for you, but they said to go ahead. Okay, so welcome. Okay, so Rabbi Mizrahi has been wowing crowds the world over. He's given classes. Some of his more famous classes have been translated into 6 languages, and recently they're working on another 2 languages, so 8 languages they've been translated into. His classes, or one specific class, I think science and Torah, or maybe it was a Christian debate with a Christian priest, had over 1 million hits on Facebook, or his general classes have over 1 million hits on Facebook, extremely popular on Facebook. His website, divineinformation.com, is rated by Alexa.com to be in the top 1% of most watched website in the world, on the web, www, World Wide Web. So the top 1%, is that cool? What are you rated?
2%?
One. Okay, anyway, so he's been, his classes are very, very, very popular, very sought after. A donor actually wanted to give you a donation, so he gave me money also, but he also gave you a big box of Rabbi Mizrahi's CDs. So they're right over there, and they're actually $50 a piece, and they should be, but they're not. They're actually free. They're free, right? Yeah. So he's known to be very candid and straightforward, and I told him that this group is a tough group, and they could handle anything heavy and tough. So we asked him to please share some wisdom with us. Again, we changed the schedule a little bit tonight. Usually we have groups now, but instead we're going to hear from Rabbi Mizrahi. And then at about 8:30, we'll break up into small discussion groups and maybe talk about what was spoken about or sum up the semester. Okay? Any questions? Well, it's the second one. Yeah, we'll just talk about Shabbaton and stuff like that.
We have one more and then graduation.
Right. But we're going through the summer, Thursday nights. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Rabbi Mizrahi.
Just 1 second. Okay, we are.
Is Rabbi, is it the camera?
Huh? I want to get on one of your videos.
Yeah.
I want to get on the website. Yeah.
Thank you, Rabbi. I have the honor to be with you. It's the first lecture after 10 days Passover vacation. It's the only time off I have during the year. So we're starting a new cycle, and this is the first lecture today. We will speak in the next hour about Torah and science. This lecture is a very popular lecture worldwide. As the rabbi mentioned, it's translated already to many languages and affected the life of hundreds of thousands of people, with no exaggeration. The reason this lecture is so powerful is because it basically leaves no choice from the skeptic and the atheist after they watch it. From experience of 20 years, they don't really have what to answer. It's very powerful. It was designed to take the most anti-religion person, the most skeptic person, the person who cannot even stand the word religion, and turn him into a believer. It doesn't mean he's going to keep the laws of the Torah, but at least one step forward, as at least he knows that the Torah is a divine book, and that's basically changed the mind of many, many people. Of course, since we only have about an hour, I won't be able to show even 30% of what this film has. That's why I brought you the DVD. Feel free to take them. Also, I brought you another film of mine, which is doing very good. It's called Life After Death. In case you do not believe that life continues in a time of death, after you watch that film, 1,000,000%, with no doubt, you will know 100% that this is just the beginning of the life. Once we leave this world, life continue. There's some scientific proofs. Now, I also bought you another DVD of the famous debate that I had with a Christian professor. And as the rabbi said, it's already made hundreds of Christians leave Christianity and converted to Judaism and become fully Orthodox. Because the only way to convert to Judaism is to accept all the laws of the Torah with no discounts. So therefore, it has to be powerful, otherwise it wouldn't... By the way, seven priests, Christian priests, left the church after they watched that film, and they started to send me emails, and I was answering their questions, and after a period of time, they realized that they have to stay in religion, but to move into the real one. Of course, you don't have to agree with me. That's why if you want, when I'm done, you can ask me all your questions, and then in person if you want. And then my email is on the CD, so you can always ask me later on. And also one last CD that I bought you, it's an MP3 with about 30 hours of lecture for the car or for the computer. It's a combination of all the lectures that a non-believer needs to change his mind, which means it starts with Torah and science. It's explaining what Shabbat is, what the Sabbath is, preparation for eternal life, the laws of repentance, what does it mean to repent, to change the lifestyle, how do we know free choice, if God knows the future, how do we really choose, how do we know there is even a God, all these famous questions that I'm sure all of you had or has, and I believe you'll find your answers right there. Now, from experience of 20 years, I can tell you that all the secular Jews that I met, almost all of them, to be precise, about 99% at least, they chose to be secular from one reason, not because they're bad or evil or anything like that. It's nothing to do one with the other. It's only because of one main reason. What is it? They have no idea at all what Judaism is. They looked at Judaism as people wear black clothes and hats and have long beards, and they live like 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, and they're obviously not interested to join this group. But they don't understand that what they really see is different customs that Jews chose to live by, which is not a requirement, it's not an obligation as the laws of Judaism. In other words, different Jews from different parts of the world, they eat different food. That doesn't mean it's an obligation to eat that food. You can eat any food you want. Or if you want to dress in this different color, that's also no problem. You choose. In Judaism, there's one phenomena that is very common. It's a mutual thing. The Jews don't like to change their customs, regardless if it's an obligation or not. The reason they don't like to change customs is because they're afraid that once they begin to change minor customs, eventually would lead to change the original laws of God, and that's a tragedy as far as religion. That's why they stick to the laws. But as someone who is not a part of religion at all, which means it's completely secular, those rules are not so critical. What we want to focus on tonight, today, is first, is there is a God, the creator of the world. Two, is this God is the one who gave the Torah, what the Jews claim that he gave one book to humanity. And the third, how do we know the written and the oral Torah, it's really divine? Is it possible maybe only a partial of it is divine, or none of it, or all of it? How do we know? What about a person would waste 7 years of his life and in the end will find out that it was all a matter of fate, and it can never be proven, and then he finds out that he basically wasted his entire time on it. That's a huge tragedy. Multiply by a few million people, who does it? Obviously, it's something to think about. So let's start from step number one. In order for us to know if there is a God, we have to follow the regular rules that we have in our life. For instance, if I take this cup, which worth about 1 cent, I never saw the maker of this cup, but I'm willing to put all my life and all my money, and if you want to bet, that a person made it. How do I know a person made it and it wasn't made by itself? Because it's symmetric, it has a size, it has a color, you can see it's a design of someone. If it was crooked, you know, all kinds of things, then I would say it's a random explosion. Something happened in the lab, and this is what came out. Well, when I see such a beautiful circle, and I see these lines, and I see everything, the way designed, and the stamp, and the writing, and all that, I know right away someone made it. Does anybody here disagree with this statement? Do you think it was made by itself? So far, everyone agree with me. That's a good start. The rabbi say, you may give me a hard challenge. So far, it's going well. So now, second step. Do you agree with the statement that the more sophisticated is the creation, it indicates about the brilliance of the creator? In other words, to make this, you and I can learn in an hour how to make it. We come to the factory, they show us, and that's it, we do it. But to make a phone or a laptop or something more sophisticated, an hour won't be enough. You have to be much, much smarter and more sophisticated in order for you to create such a perfect thing as a laptop who can do so many things at the same time. It's nothing to compare. So the more complicated and sophisticated is the creation, then it leads me to know that the creator is in a higher level than just a table or a chair or anything like that, that you don't have to be brilliant to make. So far, you agree with that statement or not?
Yes.
Good. Third step, did you ever find anything in this world, no matter what you can think of, anything, that now you know that it was made by someone? Did you ever find any product that was made without a purpose? Anything you can think of, cups, tables, chairs, cars, computers, walls, light bulbs, anything you can think of. Try to think about one item in this entire world, in any country you want, that was made, and you come to the maker of that product, and you tell me, excuse me, Mr. Lee, or excuse me, Mr. Ahmed, tell me, please, why did you make it? And the answer would be, I really don't know why. Do you think there is something like this in the world? Or everything from the least sophisticated to the most sophisticated item was always made after the maker first had a reason, had a purpose, had a plan. He knew what he wanted to make. And based on that, he made what he made. So far, you agree with that or not? So we move to the fourth step. Do you think that after we made three statements, which we all agreed about, there is anything more sophisticated in this creation than a human brain? In case you are not aware of human brain, let me give you 10 seconds, 20 seconds about it. Human brain is more or less the size of an apple, and it has 80% liquid, only 20% material, and it has more than 10 trillion connections in it. The wires of the brain, if you take one hair out of your head, and you look at that in the sun, you cannot see it because it's so thin, it's hard to see it. Now imagine every wire in the brain that we have is 1,000 wires combined is one hair. That's how thin they are. And they all are in one inside the other in such a way inside this apple full of liquid, and they're connected, which if you disconnect one of them, it may cause the person to be paralyzed, lay in bed for the rest of his life, or unable to move half of his body, or anything like that. Which means one tiny mistake or accident inside the brain, or even getting swollen a little bit, which one wire would touch the other and create a short, would create some kind of problems in the life of a person. Do you think that a brain like this, which is such a complicated computer inside a head of 7.4 billion people, something like this, you think was able to be made by a random explosion without a planner? What are the odds, if you know a little statistic? One brain, forget about 7 billion, one brain of a monkey. Monkey is not a person, it's still a very sophisticated machine. Take one brain, size of an apple, has more than all the telecommunication companies in the world combined, multiplied by 100. take all the internet, all the cell phones, all the landlines of all the countries, of all the people in the world, combine all of them, it's not even 1% of the dumbest person in the world. Now, do you think something like that was able to gather into this little box and put in place and control this entire machine for 70, 80 years, and it was made by itself? Or you think someone had to make it? Regardless who this someone is, we didn't get to that point yet. So far, anyone wants to challenge those few statements that I made? Yes, please.
If it's so sophisticated, how come one little mistake will make it, you know, not worthless, but very impaired?
If it's so sophisticated, how come?
How come if one synapse is disconnected, it will become impaired or paralyzed?
Well, in every machine, even a laptop, if you disconnect one wire, it can make the entire thing not turn on. That's the way systems are. The opposite, the more sophisticated they are, sometimes some wires inside are critical, even in a brain. Not every wire would create a death or a person to become paralyzed. Sometimes it would create reflex or vibration or things like this that you can live with. Sometimes it creates migraines or pain, but a person can function. Sometimes it can create other things. I didn't say that every wire automatically killed a person, but the understanding is that such a sophisticated thing, if we sit 100 scientists for 7 years to design such a thing, probably we won't be able to. And to control such a thing and connect it with the ligaments and the reflex and the nerve system and the muscles and all the things inside the body, the oxygen, the brain and the stomach and the lung, that everything works in a perfect timing with tenths of a seconds, a move in a system would create the entire system to collapse. Is it possible to think that something like this was made just out of a random explosion, out of nowhere, without a creator, without a real manufacturer? Yes.
Yes. So what about the idea that humans weren't necessarily put with this brain? That, like, first there was our planet and it was molten, and then we had other organisms starting out and dinosaurs and things that evolved, and eventually this very sophisticated brain came about. Like, it wasn't just put on this.
Thank you. Now let me ask you a question. The body has many, many thousands of systems. Your claim is that each system was developed randomly, and somehow they all knew to come together into one box, connected in a perfect location, everyone knew his place, and everyone connected with nerve and wires and veins, and the blood came out of nowhere, and the brain knew exactly where to be, and the nostrils knew that they have to be down and not up because the rain would fall in, and all kinds of things. No. And all these thousands of each system by itself is more sophisticated than an F-16 or an entire laptop. So you take thousands of them, and they all knew how to connect together in the right places to create such beautiful machine without any error. Do you think that something like this statistically is possible? If you know a little bit statistic. Not that I'm an expert in statistic, but as results of this lecture, I was forced to learn. If we're honest enough, we know there's no chance that something like this can happen by itself. Because even a system by itself, it's so sophisticated. Now multiplied by 1,000, and remember, they all depend on the other. They knew exactly to connect in the right places and all that. I'll give you one example. Forget about the human body. Let's look at Earth, our world. There are 19 digits. The number is quadrillion. I don't even know how to say it. It's 1 and 18 digits. This is the number of the stars in universe that NASA is claiming that exist. Okay, so now, if we take such a number, the Earth is one of the small stars where we live here. And if you know the Milky Way, it's 9 stars in the shape of a banana. It looks like a banana, yeah. You know, it looks like an arch. And one star is not in his right place. All 8 stars are exactly in the track. It's one star, it's like a hand picked it up and moved it to the right. If it would be where it was supposed to be, in this banana shape, then all the people here would be burned in less than a second. No water, no life, no nothing here. Life could not exist here. If it would move a little bit too close, then everyone would freeze. So one way or the other, we either get burned in a second or we freeze in a second. The only place that life was possible in this earth, if our little star would be exactly where it is, if it would be anywhere else in the universe, life could not survive here even 1 second. Now remember, if we look at the world, 72% of the world is water. It's like endless ocean, endless. Imagine now that there is a tiny hole in the bottom of the ocean, size of a penny. And I said, I'm giving you a $1 billion prize if you will be able to be on a boat and throw a penny somewhere in the ocean, that the penny will fall exactly to that little hole in the bottom of the ocean anywhere else. Otherwise, you won't get the billion. Am I a generous guy, or I'm basically playing games? What do you think? There's any chance to win the billion? That's why I'm so generous. Because there's no chance. What's the chance the penny will fall exactly to that little hole? No chance, statistically. Same thing, this is the same ratio. No, it's actually much better. Universe is much larger than 72% of this world. You know, it's like endless. There's an argument between the scientists. Many of them claim universe is endless. I tell you that universe has an end. Why? Because it's a creation, and creation always have limitation. The creator, when he makes something, there's always dimensions, there's always size. Even if it's almost endless, eventually has to have an end. Every creation, every physical creation has a beginning and an end. Time-wise and dimension-wise. The fact that if you fly forever and ever and ever and you don't see the end doesn't mean there's no end. In our world, it looks like an end. But overall, it could be that it's the size of an eighth, that you keep traveling and traveling and you don't even realize that after 1 million years, you're actually going in the shape of an eighth. That's why there's no end. It could be one of that, or it can be a circle, or it can be anything that eventually we return to the same point and we go forever and ever. Since it's so large, we will never be able to return to the beginning point because we won't live that long. So one way or the other, we should know one thing. The earth compared to universe is like nothing whatsoever. And the only place in universe earth could have been in order for us to be able to live, it's where exactly where it is. Do you think something like this can happen by itself? Do you think that out of 1 trillion, trillions of trillions of trillions of trillions until tomorrow, trillions possibilities, there was only one, and accidentally that one happened, that we would live exactly where the earth's supposed to be? So you think something like this, that earth was placed randomly in the only place in the endless universe where it can be? Do you think it's possible?
This is the only one that we know about.
No, we know of many stars. If you NASA, they have tools today. They measure the temperature in stars. Some stars are hundreds of degrees below zero, some is above zero, and they're still trying to prove life in other stars, so far with no success. We, as people who follow the laws of the Torah, we are not claiming ever, include myself, to be scientists or genius in science. The opposite. We only follow what we know from the books. For instance, not everything is in a book. I'll give you a frequent question that I come across. People ask me, do you think, according to the Torah, there's any life in different stars? The answer, I don't know. Why? Because the Torah never spoke clearly about it. The Torah only say that in other stars there are no people like us. It leads us to two possible explanations. One, that there are creatures, but they're different than us. And other, that it meant that there's no life like us at all. It could be rocks, could be other things, but there's no life, no people that living like us. One way or the other, it doesn't change the truth of the Torah because the Torah never spoke about it. But let me give you a few examples what the Torah did speak about, and then the scientists of our time discovered. And the question is, how did the Torah was able to know it 3,300 years ago? And that's why I made that film that convinced many people to know that the Torah could never be given by a human being. Never, no chance, not even one page in it. Only the one who created the world wrote the Torah. Remember my promise now. And if you can challenge me as much as you want, I can answer all your questions, Bli Neder. One thing after the other. There's no chance to separate the Torah from the creator of the world. It goes one hand. It's like a hand and a glove. One depends on the other. Let me explain. Since we already came to the conclusion, logical conclusion, there's no possible creation without a purpose. No one ever made something without a need for something else. Right? We've made a table because we want to eat on it. We made it in the right height. Everything is planned to be straight, not to fall, four legs. Everything according to what we knew we want. We want light, so we made light bulbs. Everything that we make, we first think, what do we need? How do we want it to happen? And then we begin to design. Now, this world, do you think that it was made for nothing? The creator that made the world, do you think he made the world for no reason, no purpose, all these galaxies, everything moves in perfect timing? Do you think he made it for no reason? Is it possible? We are smart, but we are nothing compared to the brilliance of the creator of the world. We all understand that. We are not in his league. Now, if we never do something without a purpose, unless if we're mentally sick, but if we're normal, we never do something without a purpose, right? Now, do you think the creator of the world made something without a purpose? What do you think?
I don't know what he's thinking. Why should we hold him to our standards?
We don't know yet. We're so far investigating it with our human logic, with common sense. With our common sense, soon we're going to move into the proofs, then you'll know what he thinks. I tell you how you know what a person thinks. You read his book, right? Someone wrote a book, 500 pages. After you read his book, you know a lot more about him than before reading his book, right? You know what he likes, what he hates, what he, you know, what he can tolerate, what he cannot tolerate, what things get him angry, what things make him happy. You learn from the book of a person a lot about him. Now, especially when a book, it's a book of instructions. And he tells you what's right, what's wrong, what needs to be done, and what should never be done. Once he tells you those are the rules, and this is my recommendations, and this is a warning, and this is a life risk, and this is a huge reward, then it's very easy. All you have to do is follow the instructions. But before we get to that level yet, we're still in a foundation level. So we understand that every creation has a purpose. Yes?
Oh, but about mutations, like if you consider like how many, like some mutations obviously serve a purpose, like that's how we adapt to like our environment or whatever, but there, like for every mutation that is useful, there's like thousands upon thousands that are completely useless and actually are worse for like whatever species it is that is trying to adapt. So, like, what about all those mistakes?
First of all, the mutations...
It's also part of selection.
Mutations, who told you that mutations are a plan? It could be random. There's many mutations who come as results of random. It's not just because two things got mixed together and created something new, that doesn't mean that something was supervised in order for it to create something positive. There's many negative things in life. When a car hit a person, and the person is on the floor dead, is this something that we call it positive? No, it happens. Why it happens? There's reasons for it. But I give you an example, for instance, I give you an example about evolution. So evolution, some people say the giraffe has a long neck. You know why? Because there was no leaves on a tree, and there used to be very short neck. So the giraffe was making an effort to stretch the neck to reach the leaves on top, because all the leaves finished where they lived. And because as a result of hundreds of years, generation after generation, that they stretched their neck, every generation made the neck, I don't know, 1 centimeter longer, which eventually after 1,000 years, the neck of the giraffe is 15 feet or 10 feet long, right? Do you think it's logical or no?
No, that's not exactly how it works.
But I think that concept is that the giraffes that had mutated to have longer necks could reach the leaves, so those were the ones that lived. And the ones with shorter necks died off, so the ones with the longer necks mated with each other. And so...
Fine. But the question is, how the neck, because of, if we as humans would stretch the neck like this, do you think it can go to 10 feet?
No. But that's not... No.
So the question is, based on what you say, that all the giraffes that stay with short necks disappear because they have nothing to eat.
Yes.
And the ones with the long, okay, there's only one problem. Okay, that makes more sense at least. Thank you. But there's only one problem who knocked down your theory completely. What is it? When the giraffe goes to the lake to drink, the giraffe puts the head down, and then many gallons of blood goes right away sliding into this little head. The giraffe has not such a big head. And it goes all the way, about 5 gallons of blood or whatever the amount is, to slide 10 feet down and hit the head in one shot. That's obviously a serious danger to the brain. So what happened? When we open the neck of the giraffe, when we do autopsy after the giraffe died, we open the neck, we find that in the end of the neck, there is a valve. That as soon as the giraffe puts the head down to drink from the lake, the valve turns around and blocks the blood from going into the brain. So the question is, because the giraffe stretched their necks and finally they survived, how exactly the valve arrived into the system of the neck and entered exactly where it's supposed to be? Yes?
Because the ones that were born with the mutation of having a valve survived and therefore reproduced and passed that trait on. And the ones
who produced the valve? Out of nowhere, the valve showed up?
It's a random mutation.
No, mutation. Mutation is something that may take hundreds or millions of years, right? No, but it's not something that would... No, but they wouldn't be able to survive one day without it. It's something that had to be put in 1 second in all the giraffes in the world, otherwise they all will be dead. It's not. There's no patience to wait 1,000 years until this mutation will develop into a valve. Do you understand? No one would survive. No one would be able to survive. Yes.
Beans already have valves. It's just a matter of if it was in a good spot for it, then okay, that giraffe went on and it made children. And the other giraffes, they weren't so lucky, so they didn't make the children, and we don't see them dead.
So, okay, let me go back to step one. We're slowly shifting into evolution lecture, which I have a lecture about it. You know, but I want to tell you something. Even the ones who claim the world developed over the years, right? They still never gave the answer who created the beginning of the world. Still, there was a creator. Therefore, since they don't have an answer to that, they can claim whatever they claim. But we are now still in step one. Who created the beginning? The first cell, it's brilliant. It's an amazing creation. It could have never been by itself. One cell, one drop of seed to create life. Who created that? Who planted from a drop of liquid a human being comes out? With so many abilities, they never gave the answer. Plus, in evolution, they never gave the link in a chain. You have one piece connects to the other. They never found the linking pieces. They found the beginning, they found the end. But where is all the steps in between? They never found. Plus, there's many other things. If we came from a monkey, how come there are still so many monkeys? What, only one kind became into sophisticated human beings, the rest were deprived?
The rest were happy to be monkeys.
All right, let's move on. So now, wait. We'll give some time for questions, but I want to at least finish a part of the lecture. The rest you can watch later. So now, since we understand that everything is made with a purpose, whoever made something always had a purpose. Do you think that it's clever to make a CD player, an MP3 player, a telephone, and sell it to the public without giving a manual, book of instructions, how to use it? If we had the first laptop who came to the world, they say, we're selling those millions of laptops to the world, but we refuse to tell you how to use it. How we will ever find out that if your computer is frozen, you have to press on 3 buttons to release it? We would never have this idea. How would we know? Without the instructions. It will take us million years to know all the abilities of this laptop. Rather, the manufacturer gives us a book of instructions. It takes us an hour. We know everything about the computer, what to do, how to do. We'll follow the instructions. Now, the manufacturer of the computer is interested that people will enjoy his product, or that people would not be able to use 90% of it? What's his purpose? He would create such a sophisticated machine and hide the advantages of those machines from all the users? What's the point? He's like shooting himself in the leg. What's the point? The point is that I want more and more people to appreciate what I've done for them. If they cannot use even 10% of it because they don't know all the functions, what did I do? Why did I even make it to begin with if no one would ever know how to use it? So obviously, common sense requires to understand that the manufacturer is interested that people will know how to use his creation. That leads me to the last step. Until now, you don't need religion, no Judaism, no nothing. This is human common sense. For that, you don't need to be religious. But from now on, that's where religion comes into place. Why? Because if you ask all secular people in a history, what's the purpose of life? No one knows. And I've been doing it for 20 years and did not find one secular person who has any idea what's the purpose of life. Let me share with you some of the answers I got. To be healthy, to be rich, to enjoy the world, to get married and have children, to be famous, to be a movie star, to look good, to enjoy, you know, I think I covered all the possibilities I heard. Wait, now, if we follow one by one, if the purpose of the creation was to get married, you don't need to be a human being. It can be a monkey, a dog. They also get together and have children. So you don't need to be a sophisticated person with brilliance and intelligence and speech and the things that we have with the soul. You don't need all that. You can be any species in nature and you produce children and enjoy relationship and enjoy swimming and enjoy food and enjoy the nature and everything that we have. The animals have, or even better, they don't have to walk 30 years to pay for the home. They don't have traffic 2 hours to get to work every day. They don't have all the things that we have. They don't need 5 years college, $100,000 tuition, until maybe you get a degree, maybe you find a job, maybe you finish the month financially. Maybe after all the struggle, you make $40,000 a year, barely pay for the bread and milk, maybe. And some people, after so many years of learning, they have nothing. They starve. So maybe they don't have the dog. I come home at night, I see the squirrels make party on the garbage cans, everything. Chinese, Persian food, kugel, matzah, everything, the party. Now you say, oh, but who wants to be a dog to eat leftover? I want to enjoy a fancy restaurant. So the dog doesn't understand that he's miserable, that he eats leftover. For him, it's a real party, 5 stars, free. And doesn't have to walk 3 hours to make the meal and then suffer from his stomach and a bathroom and go again to shop tomorrow and clean the food and re-cook it again. And doesn't have all this headache. Doesn't have to put 20 years of efforts into raising his children. Doctors, problem, exam, tutors, this, flying, airport, school, tuition, aggravation, drug problems, rehab. Police phone calls 2 o'clock at night. The animals don't have it. The animals wants to tour the world. Look at the eagle. How beautiful is life. Fly from one place to another. Free? Free? Doesn't need internet. 5 hours to see some pictures from Paris. They fly. They say, beautiful life. A chimpanzee wants a beautiful chimpanzee girl. It doesn't have to put a show. Buy her a drink, make a show, take her to the bar, Bleecker Street. Yes, right, you like this? All these 5 hours baloney. Doesn't have this. She moves her tail, he moves his tail like this. That's later. You know, whatever they want, they do. The animals have a much better life. You agree or disagree? So in that case, if life was to enjoy, we could have been monkeys. The lion in a bronze zoo, 20 years, getting a 10. Doesn't have to worry about the mortgage. They serve him food, comes over there every day. Everyone takes picture of him like a movie star. So what's the purpose? If the purpose was to be healthy, how come 95% of the people in the world has at least one sickness? And I'm not talking mental issues that grows by the minute. I'm only talking physical illnesses. Almost everyone suffers from something. So that's, if that was the purpose of the creator, why 95% are against the purpose? Doesn't make sense. If the purpose was to be rich, most people in the world are not rich, maybe 5%. The rest struggle, some people starve. So most of the people are not rich. If the purpose was to get married, you can be an animal. If the purpose was, what? No, you give me another option that I didn't think of. I'm talking from a secular point of view, yeah?
What if there is no instruction book and the purpose of using the computer, like the example you gave, is to figure it out for yourself?
Well, you tell me, please, what's the manufacturer that gave the computer to humanity,
yeah,
what will he gain by playing a, it's like a quiz.
Maybe.
What would he gain by giving us 20, 30 years of struggle until we figure out the secret of his computer? What would he gain by that?
Maybe he's not trying to gain anything, and he's content the way he is, and he doesn't want to glorify himself, and it's just whatever everybody wants to do.
Did you ever see in this world, from the trillions of trillions creation that were made by people and all kinds of brilliant scientists, did you ever find one product that the purpose of it was to play games with the people until they figure it out, the secret of it? What did I gain by that?
Yeah. Yeah. Has anyone ever played Flappy Bird?
No, no, wait. That's business, money. People pay, so you make money, and one day you give one person a prize. That's a different thing. Then it's for my own benefits, not for you. Like when they make gambling, poker machines in the delis. It used to be in the 1990s. So you come, 70% of the people lose, 30% win. And who takes all the profit? The owner of the machine. That doesn't mean that his purpose was to give you money. His purpose was to take your money. But wait, let's move on. Comes Judaism into place right now and say to humanity, we are the lucky people. Even though we are 0.25% from the world, 7.4 billion people, only 13.2 million are Jews. One day, we gather around the mountain, 3,300 years, and our representative, Moshe, Moses, Musa, whatever you want, spoke to the creator of the world and received the book from him. And we got that book, and the name of the book is Torah, which means in Hebrew, instructions, Orah. And from that moment on, we finally found out what's the purpose of the creation, how human beings were created in first place, how the world was created, what's the purpose of life, what's right, what's wrong, and what's going to be in the time that we die. What's going to be after? All these things are appear in this book. So now, an intelligent human being, once he hears such a claim, what do you think common sense requires to do?
Read it.
To investigate. Reading is a part of the investigation. To investigate if that claim is right or wrong. Why? In the book, and I'm sure you heard it more than once in your life, the creator, he called himself, I'm the creator of the world, I created you, I control your life, I supervise the world, I give you food, I give you oxygen, I give you children, I find you your soulmate, I'll decide where you go in the day you die, and it's all based on your actions. If you follow a book, or ignore it. You follow it, you put the efforts to follow my instruction, I will reward you big time. You will ignore it, you'll be ungrateful to me, I will treat you in a different way without going into details. Now, as an intelligent person, we all investing our life and sweat and money and effort. For what reason? That our future will be better. Why you all came to college? Why? Because you want to make money one day. You want to have a good, respectful job that you can support the family or at least help support the family. You want to be educated. You don't want to be less than the average people on the street. There's reasons for it. But if someone would come and say to most students, don't have to go to college. Here is $3 million. Sign here that you don't want to go to college. My guess would be that 99% would sign with two hands. Right? Because after all, the purpose of going to college is not to get education, because education can get on Google today. You don't need to pay $50,000 a year. So my guess is that most people come to college because one wants to be a doctor. Either maybe he wants to help people, or he wants to make money, or wants to be a lawyer, an architect, or whatever, or art major, whatever. Everyone has a goal in life. But everyone wants to make a living. If they tell college student, You can only join college and get a degree in one condition, that you sign that after you graduate, you work for the rest of your life for free. Only volunteer work. How many colleges would be in America?
No.
Two rooms. No. One, two. And everyone would make fun of them. What a fool. Why did he go to college? He's gonna, 7 years of his life he's gonna give, and in the end he's gonna volunteer all his life without getting a penny? Puts his time and money? Of course not. Why? We want the future to be better. We believe that the future will be better when we have some money in our pocket and in our bank account. So now let's conclude. There is only two possibilities, which makes the investigation not so complicated. Either it was given by the creator of the world, or it's nonsense. Now why? After Judaism, 80,000 religions and cults, imitations of Judaism popped up. Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Hare Krishna, all kinds of cults all over the world. As a matter of fact, almost every week there is a new cult somewhere in the world that someone starts. What's the major difference between Judaism to all the other religions and cults who came after, include the famous one, such as Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, etc.? What's the main and huge difference? Who tells right away which one is the diamond and which one is cubic zirconia?
The other ones were...
Yeah, give some
people, of one, and Judaism was not.
Okay, but you claim something which is true, by the way, but the question is, based on what you're saying it, the Muslim would say the same thing about his religion. The Christian would claim about the same thing about his religion. Every one of these cults claim that they got something from God, no? Yeah.
I think the idea is that the revelation was not through a vision that someone had. It was through, like, directly.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you say that. Yeah, go ahead. Very good. So, okay, so now you made my life a lot easier now. You already gave me the start. Let me just in 2-3 minutes tell you with more details, what's the difference between us and the rest of the world? Without, of course, offending anyone. We only are searching for the truth. We're not saying we're better, or we're not going into comparison right now. We just want to speak scientifically, how do you know a book is divine or not? One day, Muhammad came, almost 1400 years ago, to a group of Arab people that had no religion until that moment. There are many Arabs in the world for about 2,000 years, but they did not have a religion. They were worshipping all kinds of idols. One day, one of them, named Muhammad, showed up and said that he received a book from a messenger of God, which is the angel Gabriel. Where Muhammad knew about that name, he learned it in the Torah, that the Jews have an angel called Gabriel, Michael, Gabriel, these are all Jewish angels. Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, these are all Jewish angels. So he knew from Judaism there's such an angel. So he came and claimed that this angel gave him the Quran. The beginning of the argument should be like this. Okay, mister, we're willing to test your book. And if it's true, we'll join your religion. You claim you're a prophet. We open the book and we see that he described the revelation between him and the angel. No witnesses. No one ever saw this event taking place. Someone shows up from the desert and claims God spoke to him or gave him a book. How much percentage we have to be mistaken here? Right away, 50-50. 50% that it happened, 50% it did not happen, since there's no evidence, no proof, no witnesses, no one ever witnessed that event. It's his word against our word. He said it happened, and we can say it didn't happen. Do you have any proof? He doesn't have a proof. How long would it take us to know that the book is not from God? How long? How long does it take to prove that the book is from God is one issue. We are talking now how you disprove a book proving that it's not divine. What do you have to find in that book?
A mistake.
One human error exclude the possibility that it's from the creator of the world, which is such a super power that made such a brilliant world and control everything in 1 second, trillions of things happening in the world in his control. obviously, that such superpower machine, that what we call God, cannot make such human errors in the level of pre-1A. Let me give you an example. If I came here and I claim that God gave me a book and all of you must listen to me because I'm the prophet, and if you don't listen to me, you're going to have a problem with God. And I give you the book and you all begin to read, and you see that in chapter 1 I wrote, in the name of God, of course, that the Twin Towers collapsed in Brooklyn. That's what it says in my book. How long would you waste on my book after reading that? Investigating if it's divine or not. There's any need to continue to read in a book for an intelligent human being? Every fool would know right away that God never wrote such foolish comments, because God knows where the twins collapsed. Because if he doesn't know that, who wants to be in relationship with this God? Right? If he's worse than a little kid, how can we even have relationship with him and rely on him for our life? Yes?
Why couldn't God write a fantasy?
What can God what?
Why couldn't God write a fantasy?
In a book of instructions, can you find me one book of instructions in a history that had fantasies in it? What is it, romance? No, Hollywood, what is book of instruction. In Congress, there are fantasies in the Constitution? In the Israeli Constitution? No, intentional fantasies. Yeah. Sometimes they write fantasies, but they believe it's real.
There are tons of stories out there that are written that are completely made up with the purpose of explaining a moral.
Not book of instructions. We are talking, remember, we're talking now, the book, the Torah, is including in it few things. One, instructions how to live. Two, what's right, what's wrong. Three, what God loves, what he hates. Four, instruction how to get the ticket for life of eternity, as the Torah promised. And five, all the history and the events from the day the world was created until the Torah was given. Now, when you describe history, there's no room for fantasies. It must be correct events. Because if one of the events known to the public that it never happened, no one will ever read the book ever again.
But the point of history is that it's retold by people, and people are imperfect.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that fact. This is exactly why I made the film. I answer all these questions. But, you know, since time is really short, at least let me get to the beginning. This is all the introduction. I didn't even start this lecture yet. You'll see in the film that this is the first 5 minutes of the film. We didn't even make it to those proofs and answering all these questions. But that's okay. I don't mind answering questions, but be a little bit more patient. So now. When we review the book, we see that the twins fell in Brooklyn. We know right away it's not from God. When we open the New Testament that come and say the Jews received the Torah from God, yes, we all know it. We, the Christians, how the Christianity started? From Jews. They're Jews, followers of J.C. J.C. was a Jew, died as a Jew. Between... I was warned not to say penny, because I used to say in my lecture, J.C. Penny, but some people got offended. I'm learning, you know, from criticism. So, you know, but here is the point. A person was born and died as a Jew. The Christians who started Christianity admit, there's different versions in what they admit, that Christianity started between 70 to 300 years after his death, confirming none of the people who write the evangelists, Mark, John, Matthew, Luke, all these people who wrote the actual book ever saw him. Even if he existed or not, it's not clear. It could be that it's all a myth, it's a mystery, something that never happened. Especially when there's other cults prior to Christianity that had the exact same story. A virgin who gave birth to a person, it appeared already in cults that were way before Christianity. But regardless of all that, in the New Testament, in Acts 7, it says that the cave of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it's in the city of Shechem, Nablus. And every little kid in pre-1A in yeshiva knows that it's in the city of Hebron. still there today, same place when Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the mothers are buried. Everyone, including the Arabs, admit that it's in the city of Hebron. Where are the Palestinians praying? Every day over there in Hebron. But in their book of the Christians, it says that it's in the city of Shechem. How God made such a narrow? He doesn't know where the cave of Abraham is? Of course he knows, but the one who wrote it didn't know, and he made a human error. I give you another example of errors in the Quran. The writer of the Quran looked at the Tanakh, which is 24 books. Judaism, it's the 5 books of Moses and 19 more books. To conclude, all the way in the time of King David, 1,300 years of history in 24 books. And all of a sudden, we read that Pharaoh and Haman had an important meeting. And the purpose of their meeting was how to fight against the God of the Jews. There's only one problem. The last Pharaoh who died, Haman was born only 900 years after. So the writer of the Quran looked at the Tanakh, and he said, oh, that's a good thing. Let's take this figure, Pharaoh. It's an evil person. And here's another evil one in Persia. And let's write in my book. Obviously, I'm faking a book now. It's supposed to be divine. So, plus, I'm claiming that the Quran is a continuation of the Torah. In the Quran, in many places, it says, Ibrahim, Musa, God took the Jews out of Egypt. The whole story from the Torah, Abraham, Sarah. Many parts of the Quran are copied from the Torah. And they never claim the Jews never got the Torah. The opposite. The Quran actually says, and most Arabs in the world do not know it. If they would know it, they would consider to convert to Judaism right away. Two things the Quran says. If I would be in the United Nations, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict would be over in 5 minutes. No one would ever make a beep in the Arab world after that. Why? I would take the Quran and say, dear Arab countries of the Middle East, this book was given by God. They all scream, of course, Allahu Akbar, Bismillah, they all scream. Say, okay, I accept your theory. So let's see what God said. Reopen the book, and the Quran say, if you have a doubt in something that is said in this book, go to the book that was given before it by God to Moshe, and clarify your doubt over there, because this is a more accurate book. It's in the Quran, it says that any delegation, you have to go to the Torah and check what the Torah says. But not only that, it says clearly in the Quran that that Israel belongs to the Jews. It says that God, they call him Allah, promised the land to the Jews and took them out of Egypt and gave them the land and blessed them and saved them from evil power. It's verses in the Quran. Just today, someone from Israel asked me the sources. That's why it's fresh in my mind. So in the Quran, it shows that Israel belonged to the Jews. But it doesn't matter, because we know the Quran was never given by God. Why? Because it has a lot of human errors in it. According to the Quran, did you know that according to the Quran, JC had an uncle, very famous uncle. Do you know who was his uncle according to the Quran? Who? You'll never believe it. We all would die to have such an uncle. Mm-hmm. Moshe. Moses is the uncle of Jesse, according to the Quran. To the Quran. Why? It says that the mother of Jesse, her name was Miriam. Mary in English. Or Maria in Mexico. Doesn't matter, same woman. Right? So it says clearly over there that when she came with a baby, remember, she was a virgin. So she comes now, she had a stomach. So she comes with a stomach like this and says, what's going on? You're not married. What is this? It's in the Quran. She said, oh! They say, your mother wasn't a prostitute and your father wasn't a bad man. How did you dare to become pregnant when you're not even married? So she answered, don't kill the baby. We may have a use for it. And what is it? If you read the story over there, the Miriam, the mother of Jesse, according to the Quran, is the same Miriam who is the sister of Moshe and Aaron that lived 1,300 years before. They mixed two different Miriams and turned them into one. You understand? You're laughing. even a little kid, you know, these 5 years old kids in Yeshiva here in Brooklyn, tell them, ask them this question, they know the answers. The writer of the Quran didn't even have basic knowledge in Judaism, but he made a critical mistake. He admitted that the Jews received the Torah in a public event, and one day God gave Christianity. They also admit that that's true. And now he gave a third book. There's few problems. Since they admit the Torah is divine, in the Torah it says that after the destruction of the second temple, there will never be prophets anymore until the Messiah would come. So Muhammad can never be a prophet. Second, according to the Quran, Muhammad never knew how to read and write. He couldn't even read a sentence or write a sentence. How many versions the Quran has in the world? Google it later. Right, versions of the Qurans. Hundreds of different Qurans. Different sources, different names, different dates. Christianity. Let's give an example of Christianity. Christianity, same story. A woman went to sleep. She got up in the morning and she claimed she had a dream. God came to her in a dream and made her pregnant. And JC was born, and one day they claimed that he's going to be holy, he's going to be the Messiah, and all the rest of the story. There's only one problem. When you ask the Christian Pope, and we did it, the previous one, we ask him, who is the mother of JC? He say, Mary. I say, fine. Who is the father? He say, God, Son of God. Okay, that's what they claim. Let's open the first page in the New Testament. It says that King David had a son, who had a son, who had a son, who had a son. Like more than 30 generations until they got to Joseph the carpenter. It's a person, Yosef, Jew. He's a carpenter. He met Miriam, another Jew. They got engaged. Engaged means chupah and kiddushin, erusin of the time of the Torah, which means they're 100% husband and wife. The only thing is they were not intimately together yet. The custom of those days were they get married, the husband goes away, he gets some money, and he comes, and now they move out of the parents, and they build themselves a home, and they move in together. This used to be the custom. He comes after a few months, and he sees that his fiance, his wife, is pregnant. What did you do? Don't worry. I'm a holy woman, still a virgin, no one ever touched me, God came to me in a dream. She had all the reasons in the world to fake that story, because if she would admit for cheating, in those days, the punishment for cheating on the husband was, no?
Stoned to death,
execution. Not like today, put her on the television and give her a free BMW. It was a different generation. If a man can prove that his wife cheated, what's the punishment? Jews, non-Jews, doesn't matter. Right away, execution. Some countries are still like this. So, she had a reason to lie to save her life. He loved her. He doesn't want to miss her. So he forgave her. They got together, and JC was born. Okay. Now, the New Testament begins to describe the genealogy all the way from King David to Joseph the carpenter. Why? Why it's important that Joseph the carpenter would come from the family of King David? The answer is because the Torah says Mashiach ben David, Messiah, son of David, must be from the family of David. He can be the most righteous person in history, but if he's not from the family of King David, he can never be the Messiah. So they want to prove that Joseph the carpenter is from the family of King David, but there's a critical mistake right after. They write that he went to L.A. when the story took place in New York. He wasn't the biological father of J.C. They say he was away, and God is the father. Is God is a grandson of King David? Huge mistake. Huge mistake. Miscalculation. They try to prove that Joseph is from King David's family, and a minute later they write that he has nothing to do with J.C. God makes such human errors? Of course not. Plus, it said that Jacob went to Egypt with 75 people. The Torah said 70. What happened to God? He doesn't remember? There are many examples how it takes 5 to 10 minutes to know right away that the book is not from God. It doesn't matter how many followers it has. Once you find mistake one, two, five, 10, 20, three, it's not, doesn't matter, one, it's enough. Then we know one thing, God never wrote this book. Now, when we come to the Torah, you go all over the world, you know how many New Testaments you have? Different versions, more than 200,000 versions. More than 200,000 different texts. One copy from the other. Each one made mistake in one letter. If each one made one error, and the next one, one error, and the next one, one error, after 2,000 years, what happened? You have 200,000 different books. When I had a debate with the priest, I asked him, I told him, let's assume that you really got your book from God. If I came in front of all of you and I brought a diamond that worth $100 million, $100 million diamond, perfect, and all of you knew that I'm going to present that diamond, so all of you prepared an exact imitation made in Russia. The Russians are the best in the world to imitate diamonds. Even specialists having problems to tell the difference between fake Russian ones to original diamond. From experience, because my father was a diamond maker. And he told me the Russian fake cubic zirconia that even professionals cannot tell until you take it to a lab with laser and all kinds of things like that. So you all brought a perfect imitation to my diamond. When I presented my diamond, all of you got up and threw your diamonds at me. I got scared and my diamond fell on the floor, and now we have 100 diamonds on the floor. The one that I brought, which is a $100 million diamond, and all the fake one, which is $15 each. Now, I picked up the diamonds, I cannot tell the difference. Would you pay $100 million on one of them? Why not? Because it's 99% chance that it's fake. Who would buy something that has a 99% chance that it's fake for $100 million? So I told the priest, even if God gave a book to Christians, even if he did, now there are 200,000 different texts. Which one is the divine one? No one would ever know. So if a book has one mistake, it's not holy. If you go to the shul on Shabbat, if they find one letter is missing from the Torah, what happened? They cannot use that Torah. They have to take it and fix it. If when they send Torah from Israel to America, they make sure the last word not to complete it. Only one word is missing. 304,805 letters. The last five letters is missing. Oh, everything is perfect. Only five letters. The word Israel, in the end, doesn't appear. They pack the Torah, they put it in a suitcase, and they throw it in, you know, a little carriage. But if they finish the last letter, have to carry it, 10 people have to walk with that. It's a whole different story. One letter make it the difference between a holy divine book of God to a piece of napkin. That's what it is. Piece of napkin, you finish the last letter, it became the holiest thing in the world. Why? Divine has to be 100% perfect. If it's only 99.99999% perfect, it's not divine. That's why it's great to prove that the Torah is divine, because let me show you some of the things the Torah says. Moshe comes to millions of people, and he said to them, God gave me this book, you all have to follow it. The people who listen to Moshe right now, are they interested to become religious, or they want to be free like most people in the world wants to be free from rules? Most people are looking for a boss or wants to be free of a boss. What do you think? Human nature. People want to change their lifestyle? No. Even if they know that religion is real, most of them don't want to follow it. Not to talk that they don't have a proof. So when Moshe comes, he has an impossible mission. He has to turn 3.6 million people into ultra-Orthodox in 1 hour. How can he do such a thing? Now, when he gives them the book is speaking about who? Who does the book speaks about? About the audience. Imagine I'm coming now here, and I'm giving you a book, and I say, God gave me this book. And you're reading the book, and you see everything that happened to you in the last year. Everything. In classes, out of classes, in holidays, family issues. Everything is in a book. And I say, God gave me the book. How did I know everything that happened to each one of you? How was I able to write it in a book? Not only that, I write in a book, you used to be in Egypt slaves, and I just took you out of there. And God split the Red Sea for us, we went through, and the Egyptians drowned. If it didn't happen, they would tell me, excuse me, sir, you're hallucinating. I don't know what you took, but it didn't happen to us. We've never been in Egypt slaves. You selling us a story? We know we've never been in Egypt. Now you're telling me that all over Egypt it was blood? Every firstborn died? That we were in Egypt slaves and they were torturing us and now you took us out? It never happened. But not only that, when you read the Torah, you read about yourself that you just heard me speaking to God. In the Torah, it says that all of you heard me and God speaking, the first two commandments. Now, if one of you did not hear the voice of God, one out of 3 million, one, you would raise your hand and say, excuse me, Moshe, you're telling us a beautiful story, but I'm standing here for 5 hours, I didn't hear the voice of God. And then if anybody else didn't hear the voice of God, they would raise their hand and say, excuse me, you gave us this book from God? It says we all heard God. We never heard God. That would be the end of Judaism before it even started. No one would agree to accept a book describing his life and the miracles that happened to him in the last year unless if it was 100% real. 1% of the miracles that happened that was not correct, they would make a party and kill Moshe right there. Why they would kill him? Because one of the rules he just gave them, that thousands of them has to get divorced and leave their wives and their children. Tragedy. Huge. Imagine, the Torah says, you cannot touch your aunt. Your father has a sister. You are 22 years old, she's 20. Beautiful woman from the family. You grew up in the same area. It was all tents. And you grew up with your aunt. You're 22, she's 20. She's the youngest sister in your father's family. There's no rule in the world that you cannot marry your aunt. Cousins are still getting married until today, all over the world. So, there's no rule that you cannot marry your father's sister. So you married her and you have 10 children. There's no birth controls yet. So an average family had at least 10 children or more. So, you have 10 children and this sir, this Mr. Moshe ben Amram just showed up. And he gives you a Torah, and he claims God gave it, and you heard the voice of God. And you have to change your lifestyle, and you open the book, and you find out, Ervat dodatcha lo tegale dodatchai. You cannot touch your aunt anymore. It's illegal. But you're married to her. You have 10 children. You love her. She loves you. Everything is perfect. I'm sorry. God gave me this book. I didn't write it. And who is Moshe's father? Amram. And who is his mother? Yocheved. Yocheved to Amram. She's his aunt. Against his own parents. Do you know a person that would give a book and write in a book that he's stuttering? He needs speech therapist, he cannot talk. Would you know another person that gave real estate in Israel to all the tribes in Israel and the only family who did not get a piece of land was his own family? Gaddafi. All his children, billionaires. Mubarak. All his children, billionaires. Saddam Hussein, all his children were billionaires. The Iranian Shah, all his children billionaires. Every president, every politician, first thing he does when he comes into power, benefits his relatives and friends. That's human nature. Moshe takes the job. First, he writes that his two sons are not worthy to get his place. Joshua has to take it, but his two sons, God wrote, your sons cannot inherit you. They're not good enough. And then he writes that his speech is stuttering. And then he writes that he made some mistakes. And then he writes about himself that God punished him and he will not enter the land. He will be remembered in history as someone that was punished and did not enter the Holy Land, even though it was the dream of his life. He writes many things about himself nobody would allow in his biography, because it's an objective divine book. When people write about JC, you will never find any derogatory comment. Or Muhammad, never. Only everything is perfect. Now, let me give you one example from the Oral Torah, and we'll finish with that. How do we know that Torah is really divine? First, in my part one in a film, you develop more the concept of Mount Sinai, how we know for sure that it happened. Now I'm going to the part two of the film. I will give you one example. The Torah says Jews are allowed to eat kosher fish. What's kosher? The Torah is not going to start saying names of thousands of different fish. Who's going to read it? So the Torah says, you want to know what's kosher and what's not? There are two conditions to make it kosher. It needs to have fins and scales. If it has fins and scales, it's kosher. If it doesn't have one of the two, it's not kosher. Therefore, a Jew, fisherman, he goes to the lake now, he caught a fish, never saw it in his life. Nobody saw it. He looks at the fish, oh, scales, good, fins, beautiful, kosher. He cook it, no problem. Doesn't need slathering, nothing. Cook it, clean it, cook. The oral Torah says, remember, this was written 3,300 years ago. The oral Torah, you cannot understand one sentence from the written Torah without checking the oral Torah, what the instructions on that verse in the written Torah. There is no way to understand one sentence in the written Torah without the oral Torah. Not the meaning of the words, not the meaning of the commandments. There is no instructions in the written Torah how to keep one law. All the instructions come verbally. The reason God never wrote instruction how to keep the 613 laws in the Torah, because he did not want any other nations to know those secrets. He wanted it to stay a verbal, oral tradition, who father teaches son, and it's not published to the world in a written document. Why? Because all the nation would pretend they're Jewish. It was fresh. Everyone heard that God gave the Torah to the Jews. Everyone had a beard. Everyone had a turban. All he has to do is come with a tefillin and talit, which he reads in the Torah, the instructions how to make, and pretend he's a Jew. And you would never know who's a real Jew and who's not, and the entire Judaism would be over before it started. That's why he needed to give the instructions separately, not written. It was forbidden to write them. So you go to the oral laws, and it says, everything that have scales has fins guaranteed. You will never find in this entire world anything that you found scales in that body and did not have fins. How do I know? I created the ocean. I created all the fish. I created everything. 72% of the world is water. How deep? 12 kilometers depth we reached. It's much deeper, but the pressure is tremendous. More than 40,000 different kinds of fish we know by name. Since the Torah was given, the number of the species in the lakes and the rivers and the ocean more than tripled, because there's always natural merging. They mix together and create new species. The Torah promised, it's an obligation, the Torah promised, you will never find even one. What human being had the ability to write in a book that in the entire oceans and rivers in the world, which is very deep and large, there's so many billions and trillions of things moving, that you will never find even one of them that has scales and does not have fins. And if you ever find, it's the end of Judaism. Why? That would be the first mistake in the Torah, and that will create a doubt if God wrote the Torah or not, and that's it. The religion lost the value. Nobody can rely on Yom Kippur, on Shabbat, on kosher food, on marriage, on not everything the Torah told us will be questionable. And therefore, God defeated his own purpose. Why? One human error puts everything else in a big question. Now, do you know a person that would take the risk of writing such a thing in a book? What person has a superpower to control the next 3,000 years in future to prevent such a thing from happening? What person can watch the entire world simultaneously to know that this creature does not exist? You can prove what exists, but it's very difficult to prove what does not exist. Why? How can you know? Maybe it moved from here to there. You came to Brazil, it moved to Australia. You came to Australia, moved to New Zealand. There's no way to know. Writing such a statement is taking a huge risk. But the truth is, it's not a risk at all. Why? The creator of the world knows what he created. And he knows what he will never allow to be created. Not naturally and not artificially. Not in Miami, in the museums, not in a lab, not all the experiments the scientists do. Nobody will ever be able to create anything that lives in the water that has scales and does not have fins. Yes. I hope. Okay, now, time ran out. And I will steal one more minute from your time just to refresh your memory. In the film, I speaks about the renewal of the moon 6 digits after the decimal point. The Torah spoke about the minimal cycle of the moon. In a generation, there was not even calculator, not to talk about satellites and all the equipment that we have today. There was no NASA, no mega computers, no way to measure galaxies, movement, stars, renewal of the moon in hundreds of years. There was no ability for that. The Torah knew exactly the cycle. NASA, after investing billions and more than 30 years in research, came to the same number with a difference of 10,000 of a second. Who was right? I leave it to your judgment. If God was right or NASA was right, I leave it to you. That's your homework. You decide who was right. I show over there the number of the stars in the world, which remember that only 400 years ago, the world found out there's more than 6,000 stars when Galileo developed his telescope. Until 1608, everyone was sure there's maximum 6,000 stars because he couldn't count more. All of a sudden, Galileo came with his large telescope, 6 feet wide, and the world was shocked. But the Torah already told us the number of the stars, 19 digits. And how does it appear in the Talmud? I created in the language of the Creator. I show over there equal mathematical skips in the Torah who predicted events in 100% accuracy thousands of years before they happened. Information about Maimonides, the Rambam, 2,400 years before he was born. His name, the name of his book, the subject of his book, appear in the Torah. Other events, incredible things. After watching my film, Torah and Science, I'm committing in front of you now that you will never, ever have another doubt if the Torah is divine or not. But that doesn't mean that you're going to start living according to the purpose. I didn't have enough time to speak about the purpose of life. In my website, you have 2,000 lectures in any topic you can imagine. If you go there, you can listen to that lecture. If not, I hope I will get invited again in the future. And well, we go deeper into subjects about the purpose of life. But I want to tell you one thing for sure. We are not animals. We're a combination of body and soul. The soul is divine. The creator of the world put the soul in the body for X amount of years. We don't know how long, 10, 20, 50, 100, we don't know. The purpose of life, in one sentence, I put in front of you a set of tests. There's desires, there's infatuations, there's all kinds of things. And plus I gave you a book of instruction, what to do, what not to do. What's allowed, what's not allowed. If you live according to my rules, you will enjoy this life. And you will earn the eternal ticket for life of eternity full of spiritual pleasure, not physical temporary pleasure, which is 10 minutes and it's gone. Eternal. All the pleasures you can imagine in this world, the Torah say, of all the people from the beginning of the world until the end of the world, will not be equal to the reward I will give the righteous Jews in the afterlife if they follow my instructions. And not only Jews, even Gentiles have heaven. They have a test, they have less commandments to keep, but if they live according to the book, they inherit their share in the afterlife. There's no discrimination. The Gentiles can convert. No limitation. If they're serious, we convert them. I was involved in many conversions of Gentiles from all over the world. And they live according to the Torah. Nobody ever forced them, but they didn't give up. Once they watched Torah and Science and they knew the truth, they did not want to stay Gentile. I told them it's easier. You have only few key things to keep. And you're going to heaven of the Gentiles. Why are you pushing? No! If that's what God says it's the perfect way, I want to join the league. of the perfect way. I don't want to be in a second league. This is the way they used to. I have hundreds of emails. I'm giving you the challenge today. Nobody forced you to do anything. That's not my style. I'm not telling you why you don't keep this, why you don't do this. Be careful, you get punished. No. We want to use our intelligence. If you're in school, that means you have intelligence. You have a brain. You have common sense. Don't use your common sense on things that are temporary and not so important. And then when it comes to the most critical thing in life, you ignore it completely. Use your common sense to see the evidence. And then make your decision based on that. If you want to change your lifestyle a little bit and live according to the rules or not, it's up to you. I won't be there to know if you did or not. And I'm not having any camera following you. It's between you and your creator. But definitely I will answer all your questions, anything you have. My email is very easy, rabbimizrahi@gmail.com. My website, Divine Information. If you want more CDs, email. We'll send you more CDs. I have more than 30 collections. Thank you very much, Rabbi, for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Mizrahi. Thank you so much. Okay, so those of you who are in the advanced program, if you could, if everyone could just fill out one of these bad boys before you bounce. Scott, you put down a really beautiful song. Okay, great. We're going to take a 5-minute break to stretch your legs, and then we'll.